Program Projects and Operations Subcommittee meeting for October 10th, 2023. Notification of Open Meetings Act. A copy of the Open Meetings Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414, is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Thank you very much. Quorum call.
Here.
Yeah.
Here.
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 Aye. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved. Second.
Motion and second. Roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. Well, we have proof of publication of the meeting notice, and that will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, update on the integrated management plan. Philip Pates and Tyler Martin, NDNR.
Good afternoon, everybody. So I have with me Tyler Martin from the Department of Natural Resources, and they're going to go through our voluntary IMP as it occurred last year. It should be a relatively brief presentation. A lot of stuff that is in this is the kind of same things we report on every year in terms of the number of surface water diversions that were approved and groundwater levels and that sort of thing. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tyler.
Thank you. I'm Tyler Martin. I'm the Lower Platte coordinator for the Department of Natural Resources. The data that we're about to show you is from 2022, so we have a complete year of data to tell you about. We're going to try and make this really quick for you and get you out of here as quickly as possible. So the Integrated Management Plan was adopted in 2014. There were four goals. Really surrounding policies and practices, supply and use inventories, educational programs, and then basin-wide water management efforts. We conduct these annual reviews to identify new challenges and opportunities, increase understanding of the hydrologically connected areas. And we do that because we want to evaluate and convey progress towards the goals and objectives. So it's really getting at this cyclical process that we use of iterative management. We start with a scientific assessment when we do the plan, and we use science to inform our plan. And then as we exchange data back and forth, we can use that to revise the plan. So you can see in very light red there is your IMP area. So it doesn't take up your entire district. It's just a portion there. And then in the plan, we have surface and groundwater controls. So each year, you set a limit on groundwater acres that are allowed to be expanded. And then DNR, the limit for DNR is one-third of those acres. And so you see the surface water and groundwater control areas there. Each year, DNR and the district share data back and forth. And so DNR shares data in a variety of areas, surface water permitting activities, stream gauge measurements, pump site inspections, and surface water irrigation use. In 2022, we issued a grand total of one permit, one surface water permit. It was for 18 acre feet, and it was for the use of storage. In 22, no surface water appropriations were canceled or expired. So each year, our field staff goes out and visits pump sites as time and conditions allow. And in 2022, you can see we time and conditions run on a kind of cyclical basis. So this year, we visited 26 pump sites, and of those, six had a pump site set up and only four were running, so pretty low on surface water use. Each year we send out a voluntary surface water survey. We sent out 109 of those surveys. We got 35 responses. Of the people who responded answering this question about which kind of water they were using, 16 were surface water only, 4 were co-mingled, so surface water and groundwater, and then 3 had no irrigation at all. Overall, the average water that was applied was 5.4 inches, so really low in your district. Then, as we were talking about before, there's an exchange of data, and so the district gives DNR data as well for the irrigated acres expansion, groundwater level measurements, and municipal water use. In 2022, there were 102.8 acres issued with a variance for a peak groundwater depletion of 14.6 acre feet. And so that's a really low number. So you're doing good. We'll see here in a second how low that is compared to the allowable limit. Here is the spring groundwater levels for 22. You can see it varies quite a bit in terms of the groundwater levels being up and down. Here's the municipal water use for your area. This varies quite a lot less, so it's mostly up for 2022, which is what you'd expect. Each year you have a little bit of an increase. The Lower Platte River Basin Coalition is the basin-wide plan, so there are 7 NRDs that we participate with in the plan. You can see on the far left your allowable depletions at 1826 for a 5-year period, and then in 2022 you issued that 14.6 acre feet. So again, a really low percentage of what you're allowed to do. And then we've summarized here the goals of the IMP, so policy, inventory, education, and cooperation. And we're meeting all the goals of the IMP. So there's a varied ways we're doing that in each category. Lots of collaboration and cooperation, lots of education, and then we're working hard on our studies and our science again, too. So for the next 2 years, we've gotten together and identified the joint actions that DNR and the district will do together. So we're going to continue updating the regional Lower Platte Missouri Tributaries groundwater model, and then we've started development on a sub-regional model with Papio, Missouri, Lower Platte South, and Lower Platte North using AEM data. We're going to continue to operate or participate in basin-wide regional planning efforts like NRA, which is a data sharing program, the Lower Platte Drought Consortium, and the Coalition. So the Coalition is the entity that sets those allowable depletion limits that we were talking about earlier. And then we're going to continue to develop depletion consumptive use tracking database as part of the coalition. That's almost done. It's a 5-year effort, and we are almost done. We're putting the finishing touches on it right now. The district is in place to complete their irrigated acres certification this year. We're excited about that. We're going to continue to review data from local studies and cooperate with other NRDs, coalition, consortium, and other stakeholders, and continue to develop those groundwater models, which really is the crux of what we do, that good science. And then continue to do outreach and educational opportunities. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much. Is there anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
You said 5-year plan, so we're almost done. Then what happened? Just continue with the cycle another 5 years?
Yeah, so we got done with the first 5-year increment last year. And so we're in the first year of the second increment of the 5-year, of another 5-year increment.
Okay.
Right now.
Up and down our district runs, you know, all the way from north to south, south to city down this way. Have you noticed depletions of groundwater levels anywhere along that area, north to south?
I will defer to Philip on that.
Yeah, so in terms of depletions, the spring levels that I noticed this spring when I did my spring measurements of the groundwater from Dakota down to Springfield, pretty much all the levels were down outside of a handful of them. Not all of them were significantly down. Most of them were in the range of 1 to 5 feet and the overall groundwater being lowered below surface. I plan on going out here end of the month to try and do some fall measurements. Some of the other NRDs, Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South specifically, they have telemetry on some of their wells and their monitoring wells, so they have live readings going, and we don't. And so I'm going to go out, and they've noticed that during the early part of the summer when it was really dry and people were pumping really hard, that they noticed some big declines, but it seems like, from what I'm hearing from them, is that they've rebounded significantly as July and August came through and we got some of those really timely rains and the pumping eased off. And so now it sounds like a lot of them are kind of down just a little bit more than what normal is. And I'm planning on going out here in a few weeks to try and do some fall measurements, see what that initial bump was from the fall, and then when I go out in the spring here and do spring measurements, I'll be kind of forewarned a little bit about what happened. So, long answer, shorter. Groundwater levels were down district-wide for the most part. They weren't significant last year, but with as heavy pumping that did occur in some of those areas earlier this summer, I expect to see more declines, but the extent of them is remaining to be seen.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
Help me understand on that map. I noticed there's one area that was groundwater was up of 1.8 feet, then right next to it was down half a foot.
Yeah, that was a fun well.
Because of time that you measured, or
nope, most of those I measured in that area. I measured within about the same 3 days. From what I can, from looking at that well and the depth it is, and then I don't think it was ran at all last year. And so I think that had a little bit of a rebound where a lot of the wells that were the more surface water area wells closer to the river of it, I think those had a little bit more of a depression than what that one was. That one, when I measured that, I double-checked it and I triple-checked it because it was weird to me.
Very close proximity.
Yeah, yeah. I have that well in my head right where it is. And I triple checked it because I'm like, that is that well level right? And from what I've looked at it, it really kind of seems to be kind of a well in a slightly different part of the aquifer from the rest of them. And just the way the setup was and the way it looked all around it, I don't think it was pumped at all last year. And so it was kind of unique in that sense.
Thank you. right.
Yeah. Thank you. That's something I can't wait to go look at it this fall.
You have that one graph where you have the city's valley, and can we go back to that one?
Which one are we looking for?
You have the city's valley. Keep going. There you go. Okay, explain this one. Municipal water. So what you're saying is that Valley in 2017 did 469, I can't read it.
469.3 acre feet, yeah.
And they're now up to 826.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and this is reported pumping from the municipality itself.
Okay.
So when they do this pumping, they record everything as they go through it. And so this is what they recorded last year of the pumping that they did.
So that would account for the expanded, all the new subdivisions around Valley.
Any expansion that they've had and any expansion of in terms of houses or usage, whether it's dry, if they get pumped more. And so I imagine the numbers here for 2023 next year, when I go around asking what they all were, I imagine all those will be higher even for then as well. Yeah, and hopefully Mud South gets back to me sooner so I can actually put it on the graph. That'd be nice.
Very good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I guess on that same graph, Arlington, there's a noticeable drop-off. What accounted for that?
I think that's a typo. I think that's 328.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Just make
pretty sure. Certain that's not accurate. I'll double check it if you like, but I'm very certain that's a typo.
You look at Gretna's 10 times more. Why would that be?
Yeah. I'll double check the numbers if you guys like them.
If you look at Lincoln, I don't know what they did for 19 and 20.
Mm-hmm.
Flood. They still had pump water. Did they use the flood water for irrigation and drinking water?
Part of that has to be where they're pulling from the well fields. And so, like Lincoln, not all their well field is within Lower Platte North or Lower Platte South or Papio. And so some of those well fields are offline because of the flood. And so the pumping that occurred was from a different NRD.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Roll call.
No action.
Easy. Item number 7. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Amendment to Lower Platte River Consortium Interlocal Agreement. Philip Pace.
Yeah. So since we're on the subject of the consortium, I have before you an amendment to the Lower Platte River Consortium Interlocal Agreement that we have with the other NRDs, and so that's with Lower Platte North, Lower Platte South, MUD, Lincoln Utility, and Department of Natural Resources. This is pretty much exactly the same agreement that we've had the last three times we signed this. There's no money attached to it. It's really just an agreement that we're all going to work together, do some of these studies, look at possible drought contingencies that we can work on together. Right now it's set up to be a one-year agreement. I think there's talks here next year to amend this agreement to make it a three-year. So I'm not going before you every single year for the same thing, saying that we're not changing anything for no money. And so this is just an extension of that previous agreement from last year for one more year, so we can just keep working together and talking and kind of working on these kind of drought questions that we have together. And so, did I say that? Management Meetings Park? Okay. All right. So, sorry, everybody. Management recommends that the subcommittee recommend to the Board of Directors that the General Manager be authorized to execute the proposed Lower Platte River Consortium Interlocal Cooperative Agreement with the Lower Platte South NRD, Lower Platte North NRD, City of Lincoln, Metropolitan Utilities District, and the Department of Natural Resources, subject to changes deemed necessary by the General Manager and approval as to form by the District Legal Counsel.
Thank you for reading.
Yeah.
We can have a motion on this item.
A motion for staff recommendation.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to make comments about this item? Directors? Roll call.
Kaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Chairman?
Hi. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number 8, Platte River Obstruction Removal Professional Services Contract with Houston Engineering, John Winkler, and Mike Zotek. Houston.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have Mike Zotek here from Houston Engineering to answer any of the technical questions. I'm still dealing with the fallout from the flood of 2019. So as a result of that, the two bridges, the UP Burlington Northern that span the Platte River along Highway 75, collapsed during the 2019 flood. After that event, obviously the railroads had to come in fairly quickly and repair those two bridges to get them operational as soon as they could. To do that, they had to dump a tremendous amount of fill into the river to get out there and make those repairs. They finished that work probably around May 14th to 19th, somewhere in there. Subsequently, you know, that fill could not be removed at that time. So subsequently, another flood event occurred. It was a 2 to 5 year flood event, but obviously really no one noticed because of all the damage from the March event. So that occurred after that. So what has basically occurred with this obstruction in place is the river morphology has changed, and Mike can go more into that, talking about mobile bed streams, things like that. But what has occurred is this obstruction has reduced the flow of the Platte River in that area to about a third of the channel. If you've had a chance to drive down there, you can see it. It's become basically the left bank of the river. It's got vegetation. Trees are growing on it. Chairman Sapinski and I did an airboat tour with the Sarpy Sheriff on Friday, and we went down there to look at it. It's building up debris on the front side of the obstruction, trees and everything else. So it's not going anywhere anytime soon. The river is not going to be able to naturally remove this. So working with Mike and Houston Engineering on this for several years now, so the only way to do this is to remove that particular obstruction. So Mike and Houston did some hydraulic work, hydrology in the area, and what's occurring is they ran some models. So a 25-year flood event would now become a 100-year flood event upstream of that obstruction. So basically what would happen is you would damage some infrastructure as far as homes, businesses, bridges, things like that as well. So we started working with a group, Cass County, Sarpy County, the Papio, Lower Platte South, NRD, SID 101. We also engaged Senator Fisher's office, Mike Flood's office, Congressman Flood, Senator Holdcroft, Senator Sanders, Senator Clements, who all represent the areas affected, and the governor's office to try to find a solution to how do we find the funding to remove this obstruction. In the meantime, as we've been working through this, we did locate a funding source through the Department of Economic Development. It's called Community Development Block Grant Disaster Recovery Funds. And so Mike and I met with DED, had several conversations with them. They indicated that they would fund 100% of the removal. And so to do that, so we are in the process of when they get the application, we'll complete the application. We will submit it. The funds will not be available till sometime in January. So in the meantime, the DED has given us permission to contract with engineering firm to do the permitting, to do the specs on the removal, to do the bidding, and then also any other technical work that needs to be done. Any work that we do that we approve will be reimbursed by the DED to the Papio entity. So we're kind of taking the lead on getting this put together. So it's anticipated. We've talked to a couple contractors already, or a contractor, and they indicated that they would be that they could remove it if they started in late January or February, that they could get it removed. And I think it was a few months, if that's correct. And so, so I guess the next step in the process is approving this agreement with Houston Engineering. We're also requesting that we waive Policy 15.2 because the fact that fire was the original engineering firm on this, and then as they turned into Houston, we just continued that. So Mike's been intimately involved in the studies, into the conversations of finding funding, working with all of the political parties and all of the stakeholders in here, as well as, you know, finding the, obviously, those resolutions. So, so we recommend approval and be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item?
Rogers? Why don't we just ask the railroad to remove it?
So the railroad.
Kidding.
Okay.
So this has been going on.
We're focusing on solutions, not who caused the problem. So.
Yeah. No, I was. I know how long this has been going on, and Mike and you and Kevin Lisipinski and everybody else. This really affects South Bellevue, so I'm very happy this has moved forward. I didn't realize that this grant was out there, so. Right. So that funding source is very good. I know they've been have some heated meetings over the last with all kinds of the politicians down south. So I'm glad we got to this point.
So we worked with NDOT. They've been intimately involved in this as well because they're obviously Highway 75 bridge. They're also allowing us to move some material into some of the property that right away that they own to help reduce the cost. So they've been a great partner as well. So I didn't mean to leave them out on purpose.
Chairman, I want to move for staff recommendation.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Comment?
Yeah, I do have a comment. Hey, good job finding that funding line. Are we taking it back to its original state or just mitigating at least to get the clearance of the so it flows better now?
I'll let Mike answer that.
Because I know it's a – I don't know if we can ever get back to the where it was.
So our goal is to get it as close as we can so that the river acts like it did. So we're confident in two things. Number one, that, you know, the size of the rock they brought in to build the causeways, to repair their bridges, you know, that's not going to move in a flood. It's, you know, we went out and potholed it and found it. You know, there's some rocks 3 foot diameter. That's not going to move. So our goal is to get as much of the rock out as possible and as much of the sand out as possible. What we don't know yet is really how much of this they're willing to stomach, you know, as far as a cost. You know, we gave them some preliminary cost based upon some early work, but one of the things we're going to do in early November is go out with geophysics and lay a line across there and find out exactly how deep the rock is. Then we can get a better idea on total project cost. So if we're limited, Director Fowler, if we're limited by money, we're going to get all the rock out and as much of the sand so that when the river does start flowing, it can start taking sand with it. Right now, that sand isn't going anywhere because it's hidden by the shadow of the created by the rock. So that's why the sand isn't moving right now, and that's why if you looked at an aerial, you could see that that's what's the sand that can be taken away has been taken away. So we're going to basically start out in the middle of the river if we do end up. But they have a good pot of money. They've been indicated that they don't really have anywhere else to spend it because of some of the attachments to the money. You know, it's still got to be 2019 affected, et cetera. So hopefully we can get them to pay for everything. Otherwise, we're going to get absolutely as much as we can to reduce risk to as close to pre-flood condition as possible.
Great. Well done.
So best case scenario, it would be done by the flood season of next year? The work could actually be done by then?
If everything goes as well as possible, and like John said, so far he's been told the money be available in January. And if that's the case, then we're hoping, and that's why we're getting out ahead of it, so that we can get all the permits in that order, you know, and all the plans together. We're coordinating with the railroads right now as far as the rules for crossing their tracks, moving under their tracks, et cetera. So we're going through all those hoops now so that when January comes, we can let it, hopefully as soon as close to then, so we can start as close as we can in January. And we've several contractors very interested in this project. It's great winter work, you know, because all they're doing is pulling the river's as low as it could be, and, you know, all they're doing is pulling rock out and sand out of the river. So it's good winter work for contractors, so we're hoping for competitive bids that we can start in January. And like John said, hopefully in a perfect world, they're done before flood season. But even if they're not totally done, they're going to be a lot closer than they are today, and that'll help reduce flood risk for this coming spring. The good news is we don't have a huge snowpack this year. You know, there's a large snowpack in Colorado. You always hear about they had a great snow year. But we got a lot of dry aquifers between here and there because of the drought we've had since 2019. So when snow does start melting, you know, how much of it's going to make it through the Platte River sponge is yet to be determined.
Jim?
You answered part of my question as far as completion time. I'm assuming that the railroads have to be pretty good partners, let us on their on their right of way, because it went in on their property. It's going to have to come out on their property. Is it that simple, or is there an alternate means of excavating it out?
You know, I always say you can do anything for some price. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the easiest way to get the rock out of there is to cross one of the tracks. I've actually got a meeting with the Bellevue Rod and Gun Club Thursday night to work with them. Hopefully we can bring them into the project. But bringing it out between the tracks and crossing over and getting onto La Platte Road is going to save a lot of money, because if you think about it right now, if you take it out through the NDOT property, you got a right turn only on Highway 75. And if for some reason material had to go north, you'd have to go all the way across the river, cross Bay Road, circle back around and come north. So right now, yeah, UP and BNSF have been much – they're communicating right now and asking us what they need. And I think that was kind of part of the soft agreement that John worked out with them, is that, hey, we found some money to do this. We expect your cooperation. And so far they have been cooperating. And I want to say also that the Corps of Engineers has been a great partner on this also, and DOT more than anybody. So.
Thanks.
I think he's next.
Okay. How much rock are you talking about?
So that's the million-dollar question, Director Japp. If you look on the YouTube site, here's what we don't know is that, so the rock was placed in March 19, you know, right after the flood.
Did the railroad, at their expense, did they do this? Totally on their own, right? They just dumped it all in there.
And without permits, yeah. So what we would assume is that because it's downstream of the bridges, that there's a big scour hole there. So, you know, at the Highway 50 bridge after the 2019 flood, USGS measured like a 42-foot scour hole. So high velocities coming through the bridges, enough to tear the bridges apart. There's probably a scour hole there. So what we don't really know, we know that where the top of the rock is. What we don't know is where the bottom of it is. Now, we've talked to some contractors involved in hauling it in. We know that, you know, there were rock trucks back down Highway 34 all the way to Harlan Lewis Road for a week. On the website, the YouTube, if you look on YouTube, you know, both railroads kind of brag about bringing in, what was 140,000 tons? I mean, there's 140,000 tons of rock is kind of the number.
1,600 dumped, or side dumped.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
And one of the challenges is that rock was what they call blast rock. It was just, they didn't care. It didn't have to meet a certain gradation. So normally when we work on projects for you or, you know, or NDOT, the limestone needs to meet a certain gradation. This doesn't meet any of that. And so it's not necessarily usable by everybody, but that's one of the things we're working on is some local people who can use the rock. And which may include some work that the NRD needs to have done.
I'm assuming the railroad has no interest in removing this.
That would be a fair statement.
Accurate.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call. We have a motion. Do we have a motion?
Yes. Thompson and
Fowler. Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Caesar?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Item number 9, WP2 construction bids. Ian?
Good afternoon, directors. Last Tuesday, October 3rd, we opened bids for the WP2 dam and reservoir project that's going to be built just a stone's throw away from here around 180th Street and Giles Road. We received three bids for the project, one from Valley Corporation, one from General Excavating, and one from Grand Construction. The project was bid with an alternate, so you'll see that in the table on the memo and in the more detailed tabulation in the letter that's attached to the memo. Bids ranged from $7,117,243.80 to $12,880,153.70 without the alternate, and from $7,183,643.80 to $13,620,153.70 with the alternate. And that alternate just includes some additional fisheries excavation and haul-off. In both cases, Valley Corporation provided the lowest bid, and they met all the requirements to bid on the project. A more detailed tabulation of the bids with corrections from Houston Engineering is in the attached document, and it also includes a recommendation letter from Houston for Valley, which speaks to their general good workmanship and professional conduct on past projects. So the staff recommendation is to award the project to Valley Corporation for the low bid of $7,117,243.80, which I'll also note is $91,713.70 below the engineer's estimate, which is at the very end of paragraph 2 on the memo. But I'd be happy to take any questions on any of the bids. Mike is also here and can speak to it as well, or any questions on the WP2 project in general.
That motion moves to a recommendation.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
Yeah. The alternate bid just wasn't worth the money. Is that simple enough?
As far as why we're not recommending with the alternate, is that your question?
Well, we're recommending without the alternate.
Yes, sir.
Which is the fishery and whatever it is here.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, if that's important enough, it'll be done in the future.
That's kind of the plan. Additionally, in their bid, Valley Corporation didn't really include the additional haul-off cost. So it would likely be more expensive than what they had bid in their alternate if we were to include it. So, yeah, we'll see, I think, as the project continues. If it's important and viable, then we'll include it later on. But for now, just proceed without that alternate.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Item number 10, Elkhorn River Trail Bridge Program Agreement with NDOT. Eric, please.
Good afternoon, everyone. The district has been working on preliminary planning for networks of trails around the metropolitan community for a number of years. One of the locations that has been identified as a potential future trail connection is following the corridor from kind of West Omaha in the Elkhorn area down along West Maple Road, across the Elkhorn River into Waterloo, and then out toward Valley. This has come up in a number of different plans. We've been working with MAPA on the Western Douglas County Collaborative to identify how various pieces of the original Western Douglas County Trails plan, which was drawn up by the district in 2003, how those projects might move forward. The Western Douglas County Trail in Valley, the bridge between the YMCA and the school, was one part of that plan. The other major component of that plan was a crossing at the Elkhorn River. So in working with the communities in Douglas County, the county itself, and with MAPA, about 2 years ago, we identified some preliminary work that would be necessary for a crossing over the Elkhorn River, starting from the Elkhorn River Recreation Access on the left, or the east bank, which the district constructed and maintains, across to the west bank, where the Waterloo Levee and Trail System is currently in place. There was an opportunity earlier this year when the Nebraska Department of Transportation put out a call for projects through their statewide transportation alternative program, and working with MAPA and with the communities in Douglas County and the cities, the NRD submitted an application for a federally funded project to construct a trail crossing from the recreation area across into Waterloo and connect to the existing trails. That application was approved for 80% of the project, following the standard federal funding guidelines that we've used on projects in the past. And we've had some preliminary meetings with NDOT about moving that project forward. So this is essentially the very first step of initiating a new federal aid alternative transportation project to construct the bridge connecting on the east side from the publicly accessible land at the recreation area to the west side, again, to the publicly accessible land generally by the road and where the existing trail network meets. In both directions, further to the east, we are working with Douglas County on connecting a trail along the south side of West Maple, kind of up the hill toward the mortuary and the cemetery, and then eventually to Tahazuka Trail and Park. And on the west side, there's additional trails in Waterloo that were also funded by this same funding source from the State Department of Transportation to construct the trail on the southeast corner and then the southwest corner of Waterloo, so that this trail would branch into that trail network, wrap all the way around Waterloo, and then eventually to look toward a connection west toward Valley. So this is the largest and most complex part of the Western Douglas County Active Transportation, Recreation, and Natural Resources planning that we've been doing for a number of years. The preliminary work that we've done over past years put us in a good position to submit that federal funding application, and that's what led to the approval. And so this would be the fundamental agreement between the district, and NDOT for the 80%, 20% cost share on this project, following basically the exact same model as the Platte River Trail Bridge, that we are just moving into construction now. We do anticipate in the future talking with the city of the Village of Waterloo, the City of Valley, the City of Omaha, and Douglas County about a secondary agreement towards local participation in that 20% of the local share of the cost. We don't have that agreement in place now, but we do want to talk with those communities about what they would be able to contribute to seeing this project move forward. So again, this is just the very first step. It does specify a general estimate of the overall project cost at approximately $6.6 million. The preliminary work to set up contracts for professional engineering and for environmental engineering and services, we're working on that with NDOT now. We expect to have those agreements over the next few months, but this authorizes the district to begin that work with NDOT to get those consultants on board, begin the design work, and eventually look toward getting this project constructed. So at this time, the recommendation, I'm sorry, if we can skip to the next page. Speaking about the area, but I didn't pull up the map. This is the kind of broader regional map. You can see West Maple Road, the Elkhorn River. On the left side, that's the Village of Waterloo. On the right side, kind of all of the houses are at the top of the hill. That's what used to be the city of Elkhorn, now the western part of the city of Omaha. If you go on to the next page, there's a little bit more zoomed in view. Yep, so you can see that the intention is to construct the bridge across the Elkhorn River from the kind of northwest portion of the recreation area over to, and if you scroll down just a little bit, I cannot remember the name of that street. Yeah, there you go, J.C. Robinson Boulevard, which is on the edge of the extended Levian Trail. And the defined area of this project is just from the land that we currently own and operate as the recreation area to publicly accessible land on the west side, which is the road and the levee. That would avoid any of the complexity of acquiring right-of-way during a federal aid project. If you go to the next page. This is essentially a before photo. Standing on the west side on top of the levee, looking north up the river, you can see the ramp access down to the river. So this would be a freestanding structure south or downstream of the existing bridge to provide the connection from the recreation area across west to the top of the levee into the trail and the street that runs into Waterloo. We had letters of support, as was indicated here, from the Village of Waterloo, Douglas County, City of Omaha, MAPA, and the Elkhorn Athletic Association at the time of the federal funding application. So we've got good support from a number of partners who all believe this would be beneficial to them. Elkhorn Athletic Association operates ball fields directly to the east of the recreation area. That's how they ended up as a sponsor of this as well. Kids from Waterloo cannot currently walk across the highway bridge, but they could walk across a trail bridge to get to the fields on the east side of the river. So the recommendation is to authorize the general manager to execute the agreement with Nebraska Department of Transportation, which would begin the federal aid project to see this project move forward. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Eric, the actual bridge is the old Maple Street, is it not?
This bridge that we're seeing in the photo is the new highway bridge. I don't know when that was constructed, but there was an old bridge that was removed. There was a...
That would be just immediately to the south of our current recreation site, between a recreation site and the RV park.
So it's a little difficult to see, but I think this should be.
What I'm asking, you're not going to be putting a bridge right in the middle of the current boat ramp.
There. It looks like it's just upstream
of the launch. No, it would be upstream. We will need to evaluate the existing bathroom facility. It's possible that we need to relocate the bathroom facility. We think that we probably can put the bridge.
Okay, so you're putting it in our existing park rather than... Okay, 20 years ago when we came up with this idea, we were going to use the old Maple Street, which is...
Yep, and so if you, the laser doesn't seem to be working here, but from the dot, there is a road that runs at about 1 o'clock northeast to southwest. That was, you're right, the location of Old Maple Street. But that location, the levee was constructed, and we don't think that you could construct a new trail bridge footing in the location where the levee is currently located on the end of what used to be Old Maple. So the location that was submitted as the preliminary conceptual location was on the northwest corner of the park. I will say that we are in the process of discussing getting a consultant on board, and because of the complexity here, the first step will be for the consultant to identify a scope for scoping of the design work, so kind of a two-stage design process. But the very first thing we'll do is to look at up to the 30% functional design stage, and we'll look at what type of structural challenges might we encounter and how would we address those. So that is the first thing that we'll do. We did a very light conceptual study to get order of magnitude cost when we submitted the federal aid cost share application, but it did not involve any hydraulic modeling in the river. It did not involve any of the on-site survey or inspection or more detailed stuff. So we do not know the explicit location. That will be the very first part of the design process, is to determine, is the conceptual location parallel to the current West Maple Road and Highway, is that the best location? We also think that is the best location, but that is the first part of the design process.
Well, if you have that, if you have the bridge in within the confines of the existing river park, then we're going to have motorized vehicles parking. I'm assuming that's going to become a trailhead, or which, you know, it was supposed to be closed November 1st. You know, so how is that?
Yep, so we've talked about, we would expect operational plan update to how you control the access to the river location specifically, and it's possible that a different gate might be necessary to allow the eastern portion of the parking lot at the recreation area to be dual function as the trailhead parking lot, so that it might be segmented slightly differently so that we can close the river access as we normally do, but still allow people to come down and access.
My concern is, in the summertime, that parking lot is absolutely filled with tubers right now, and now you're talking about putting a pedestrian bridge in there, which is going to bring more traffic, and we just don't have the space for it.
I think the support of the Elkhorn Athletic Association is something that's important to the project. We would probably discuss with them if additional parking in the area was possible. My understanding is that there has been past discussion with them about the potential for expanded parking at the recreation area that might be shared or some kind of additional use, because they have the area directly to the east of the current river access location. And we haven't gone into an evaluation of potential need for parking or where additional parking might be located. Again, that would be some of the preliminary work that would need to be done to identify where is the best place for the bridge and what adjacent facilities might be needed.
Just for the board's old information, we got $5 million from the federal government. We surely got it for the entire project, which was going to be a bridge across the Elkhorn River, run all the way to Valley, and then tie into Valley, and then go to Platte River Landing, which is a Highway 64. That was going to be done for $5 million 20 years ago. What we got hung up on is on Maple Street, west of Waterloo, the Corps of Engineers wanted us to run a trail on each side of the roadway. Well, what the hell for? That's just ridiculous. We don't have it in Valley now.
Yeah,
you know, because they're worried about wetlands.
Yep. So the you can just barely see where the highway curves north and continues up, and Old Maple branches directly west. And so that is not part of this project. That is outside the scope of this project. But we have discussed the potential connectivity with the county and with Waterloo and with Valley. And we think that everybody generally wants to see connectivity established there. But this doesn't anticipate what it might look like specifically to make it from Waterloo to Valley. That is outside of the scope of this project.
To me, that's very, very important. Why in the hell are we going to build a bridge that goes from one side of the Elkhorn to the other and then in? I mean, you know, other than the fact you can go east up the hill to Omaha, but...
In discussing federal aid projects, it's important to make sure that the scope of the project is well defined. Otherwise, federal agencies get a little expansive in their review. And so if we were discussing a potential connection on Maple, we might again run into the same problem we had last time with the Western Douglas County Trail project. And so the scope of this project is only for the bridge. That's what we
believe will make it a simpler project to deliver. We can avoid the risk of a many, many year project. The Platte River Bridge Trail, we went start to finish in, I guess it's been 4 years now, and construction is scheduled for next year. We would anticipate a similar timeline here. NDOT has been very dedicated to accelerating their work to see those projects move forward. So we anticipate doing the bridge, the most expensive portion of the trail connectivity in the area, with the federal aid funding under a narrow scope. And then additional connectivity is being discussed by local partners to avoid those issues that we encountered last time. So we do anticipate additional connectivity, as we said, on the south side of Maple East up into Elkhorn and potentially from Waterloo West, but that is not a part of this project, and that helps us keep this as a relatively simple to deliver project. So I know that that's not an answer to how would that be addressed in the future, but that is specifically because if you get too expansive in the description of how you're going to address that, federal review starts to say, well, we got to do an additional review on those wetlands again, and that's what we'd like to avoid in defining this as just the bridge, just from the recreation area to the existing access on the west side. We'll build that project now, and we will continue working with other partners on the other projects. I'm not sure if that gets to your point about the future connectivity. I do agree with you that having the additional connectivity makes this significantly more beneficial, and both the city and the village of Waterloo, City of Valley, Village of Waterloo, both agree that that connection is important as well. But we don't have a clear answer for how that would be constructed now. The Douglas County did submit a collection of projects that considered some study in that area for funding from the state transportation alternative program. That study project was not approved this year. So Douglas County has indicated that they are interested in working with the cities and the villages to establish that connection. But that is not moving forward at this time. The bridge and the two sections of the trail in Waterloo are what were funded by the state TAP program in this funding cycle. So those are the projects that are moving forward in the short term, and we'll continue to look at additional connections in the future.
Who made the determination to move it, rather than use the old Maple Street, to move it up to the restroom area?
That was based on the how close the levee, the Waterloo levee, is to the banks of the Elkhorn River. We don't think that there is enough room to put the footings on top. Putting the footings of a bridge into an existing levee would be a very challenging 408 review. And so we believe that in the preliminary investigation, preliminary engineering, a bridge on the north side of the park connecting down, and if you go down to the photo again, two more pages, the west side of the river, yeah, so you can see there's a little bit of a shelf on the west side. We think that putting the footing or the abutment on a trail bridge on the west side, kind of in this flat shelf area, would be possible and would not impact the levee. And so that would avoid a complicated review by for Section 408 for impacts to the levee. So we think that this will be the easiest answer. But again, we'll get a little bit more clarity on that when we begin the design process with the consultant once they're on board.
I mean, you said you're looking at a picture where you have a footing on the west side on Maple Street. What the hell the difference?
I don't think we have 100% certainty on where specifically it will be, but the location that's reflected in the plans is just the best estimates of where we think will be the easiest, and the contracts that will come from this agreement would help us to identify where specifically that will be. And we'll make sure and discuss those alternatives with community input sessions when we go through the design process. Again, we have not been to the level of design as yet to specify this is the exact location where the footing will be. It is possible that the other location might work.
My concern is that the boat ramp runs virtually within, 40 or 50 feet of the existing restroom, not even probably 40 feet. And so you're screwing up the boat ramp, potentially. And I have some big concerns with that. Everything, in my estimation, ought to be to the south of that, on the old Maple Street, which is state property.
So from other river access recreation sites, general practice is not to try and put tubes in immediately upstream of a structure. So the conceptual analysis here was to determine whether a free span structure across the entire river or a multiple prefabricated span would be a better design. Again, we submitted the funding application based on a three span prefabricated bridge with two, which would require two piers in the river. And so if that were located downstream of the boat ramp access,
access, we think that would have more impact to the people who are using the river from an additional structure downstream. So that also led to placing the structure upstream where there is significantly less impact to people who are immediately getting into the water. Again, we've looked at a couple other locations. Generally, you try not to put the boat ramp, or sorry, the river access ramp upstream, because then people come off the bank and immediately toward the structures. So it's easier to avoid if you're already in the water, to avoid the piers that are in the water. So that was another thing that led us to recommend or to design the conceptual, design the concept of the project upstream of the ramp. And we do not believe that there will be any impacts to the boat ramp necessary. And I mentioned the bathroom structure. It's possible that we will find out during design whether impacts will occur there and we need to do a relocation. We don't know that that's going to be required, but it's just one of the things that was identified as if we want the structure to be outside of NDOT right-of-way to avoid any complications with NDOT from the highway bridge, it will be close to the bathroom location. It is possible we'll need to evaluate a potential relocation, but we don't know that that's going to happen. Again, you don't really find out 100% of those things until you get to about the 30% design stage.
Have you ever kayaked down the river and go right next to a pier and see what happens to your kayak?
I have not in the Elkhorn River, but...
Well, I guarantee you, I have, and on the Elkhorn, and you'll get sucked right into the pier, as with canoes or any other boating.
Yeah, so that again is why we when we realized that it's probably easier to do a three prefabricated span bridge that was moved upstream of the boat ramp to avoid that risk. The assumed location was that the new piers would be immediately downstream of the existing piers. And so that would minimize the risk for anyone using the river for recreation. That would minimize risk for ice jams and minimize the hydraulic modeling. We assumed to minimize the potential impact of the hydraulic modeling in the floodplain review. So we'll finalize that during the design process as well. But the avoidance of being immediately downstream of the ramp was one of the reasons that we wanted to push to the upstream side of the ramp for the location for that span bridge.
Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Teaser, Director Teaser, is wanting cantilevers on that bridge, like the Highway 75 bridge, and we don't have to put any piers on it. Am I right?
No. Well, so we did actually evaluate that. That was the third option that we looked at in the kind of preconceptual study. The piers on this bridge are not already widened sufficient to allow girders and then a trail on top like they were on the Highway 75 bridge. So there would need to be additional pier extensions put onto the existing highway structure downstream anyway. And once you're in the water doing pier extensions, it's basically the same permitting consideration. So that would cause additional challenges with NDOT from being on their structure, which they do not love. And it would not eliminate any of the hydraulic or modeling risks from having additional piers in the water. So it would have all of the same complexities, but just with additional concerns from NDOT, not the local projects office, but the District 2 office, who is responsible for this structure. So that's why that option was evaluated in the preconceptual study and did not get prioritized.
I attempted to be facetious, but you covered it well, Eric.
Yeah, Schemmer helped us with that conceptual study to get that original estimate number, and that was the third option that we looked at was on the existing structure, a three-span prefabricated bridge or kind of a more iconic structure that might be a single span all the way across to avoid the piers.
Yeah.
And again, we'll re-look at those three options during the early phases of design here to find out which of those is best. And Director Teaser, to your question, it might be possible to do a kind of more visually iconic structure downstream of the ramp without piers. That would be a very long span. That would probably require something more structurally different than the kind of prefab contact bridges, maybe something like a suspension type of bridge with short piers on the ends, or short towers on the ends. That is something that we looked at kind of in the preconceptual, but we don't have a final answer of what exactly would that mean. So that is still a possibility, but we just think that the most likely, most simplified project to submit to get the federal project started was to identify the preferred alternative of the three-span piers in the water downstream of the highway bridge.
Right, like a tiny bob you're talking about.
Something like that, yes. And there are similar projects, Des Moines, other locations. Schemmer has done those types of designs. So we did evaluate it. But in order to span the entire floodway, you would be at something like 400 or 450 feet. For reference, the long span at the Valley Bridge is 270 feet.
So it would be significantly longer to get all the way across the river and all the way out of the floodway. It is possible. It's just that you can't do it with a single prefabricated single-span bridge. That's why the piers in the water would be necessary if you're doing a kind of a prefabricated bridge structure.
Director Teague, are you through?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions regarding?
We'll work on it first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. We need a motion.
You had it. Move your staff recommendation.
We got a motion. We have a second?
Second.
Second. Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Teaser?
Pass.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Thank you, Eric. I think you're up next.
Yes, thank you. Next item is the...
Abstain. Yeah.
I'm sorry. All good, Chrissy? Yeah.
You go.
Okay. Next item is the annual review of the long-range implementation plan. This is a state statute required five-year look at the future operations, personnel needs, funding, land rights, and revenue sources. So we do this each year. The preliminary pages are somewhat background information. The document has been updated with the current staff that's provided by Gene to reflect the changes in our staff over the last couple of years. There were three or four new or different employees in different positions. And then we get into the kind of narrative section. I won't go into too much detail on the narrative. In discussion with other project managers and management, the general implementation of this document, the largest portion of our expenditures are associated with the Papio Creek Watershed Partnership projects, so the dam sites. And so that's where the biggest changes in terms of dollars occur in the financial tables at the back. In general, most of the other programs and projects have remained similar over the recent years. There were a few projects that are removed from the document this year that were included in the past. The Elkhorn River 240th Street would be one that was completed and is no longer in the table because we have no money in the budget this year, nor do we project any future expenses. The same is true for ZB2 and the road structure program. So those are no longer in the table compared to last year. But other than that, programs, projects, general operations are substantially similar. And the same is true for the projections on the amount of staff time necessary for the programs and projects and for the future expenses and future revenues. I believe we talked last year about using the LRIP to help project the five-year expenses and revenues for some of the larger other programs as well, specifically the Urban Drainage Way program. We do a multi-year projection on how much cost share we have allocated based on past approvals, and that has led us to not have an additional call for projects under that program. And so the same is true here. We know that we have several large projects in the coming years, so we'll evaluate in the spring whether or not we believe there's likely to be additional funding available in next year's budget. But that's the other major area where projections over the five-year timeline have led us to make changes in our operations in the way we include projects into the budget when that time comes. So, again, in general, updated for the Papio Watershed projects with the projected expenses and revenues, and largely similar other than that. And the recommendation is to approve the long-range implementation plan, or LRIP, and submit it to the state agencies as required.
Thank you. We can have a motion.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors.
I have a question. Just a more or less a request. Mm-hmm. And every time we do one of these, I really would prefer that we add a few tables and graphs that would help us explain the long-range implementation plan to the public. The original flood control plan listing all sites, what the original cost was, indications of which ones have been completed and which ones are still yet to be addressed, and current projected costs going forward. And I could speak to you later on to see what it would take to get these done. But I think the public really needs, they see us making these plans, but it's just not presented in a way that most people can visually understand where we're at with the long-range flood control plan of the county, for instance.
Yeah. So each of the watershed partnerships, PAPI and SARPI, does have their own plan that has a lot more detail. So this is kind of financial only. We don't go into too much elaborate detail. But we could certainly talk about how to reflect that a little bit more accurately or more in a more public-friendly way in this plan in the future. We did talk about potentially kind of a larger structural redesign of this document. We think that this is organized with I think it's 56 individual programs and projects that are outlined here. We might look to reorganize that under the 7 priority areas, which are identified in the early pages of the plan as outlined by state statute listed on the wall behind you. So we might reorganize the document into 7 broad categories plus administration and then show large things underneath that. So we've talked about that for a couple of years, as when is the right time to kind of fundamentally redesign the whole thing, and including more information about past work in the watersheds and future work in the watersheds feels like a good, if we're doing a fundamental redesign of the entire document, that would be a good time to incorporate that information. So we are anticipating that for next year, so I'd be glad to talk to you and make sure we get that included.
Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Chairman?
Hi. I think that completes the report. Thanks, Eric.
Well done, Fred.
I think that's it. Have a good evening.